It's time for The Citizen Lobbyist, a discussion of local, borough, and state politics featuring Terry Snyder and Mike Malefsky.
So how are you doing today, Citizen Lobbyist?
Well, I'm enjoying this a little longer, sort of our spring backwards this year. Weather's been great, and looks like we've got some fair days ahead, so it's all good.
Yep.
How about you, Mike?
I'm feeling the same. I'm feeling the fall weather. I've had an opportunity to travel around a bit, going to slightly different elevations, and I've noticed colors coming to the trees where they are a little bit behind here in downtown Palmer. But it's all happening. The seasons are changing.
Yeah, the wind is treating us well so far.
Yep. Well, let's move on to look back at Tuesday's meeting. You were able to listen in. I was there, and we're talking about the meeting that involved the Palmer City Council. Where do you want to begin?
Well, you know, I missed a little at the very beginning, Mike, when they had a report from the golf course. I see the things in the packet about that. Looks like they had a pretty good.
Sure, and I was there, and I think that what happened was George Collum, who has been managing under contract the golf course for a number of years, was in to point out that it appears once again, as has happened before, that in many ways the Palmer Golf Course is in great shape in comparison to other golf courses around and about the state. This has been a good year for golf courses. There was some discussion about sometime when there's a bit of rain, et cetera. But I know that my test for whether the golf course is going to be likely in good shape is to look at our own lawn. And I would have to say that this year we have the greenest, finest grass there has been in my memory. And I think that has been the case there. George is able to go through and point out the variety of things they're working on. But basically, the golf course seems to be doing well. I think that's a good summary. Yeah.
Even with the slow start of the spring, it looks like they
exactly
came out on top.
Yeah. There's that to be said. And I think you'd have to go back some years and try to resurrect in the memory of the people who were there the discussion about the golf course when it was originally proposed, and there was some concern about the city taking on such an enterprise. And I think, all in all, it seems to have produced a positive result. There was a large loan taken out, essentially to make it happen, and that's been paid off over time. So now they're dealing with operating costs, and the city does subsidize sometimes a bit, but I did not come away with the feeling that the council were looking negatively toward it. They think they were happy to say that this particular enterprise, along with the airport, represent attractions for the city in a positive way. At least that was my impression from the reactions to the report that was given early. Yeah.
That's good. Those are some pretty nice assets to a small community.
That's true.
To have both an airport and a really nice golf course.
So let's move on from that point. Then you were able to listen in, and I
was able to listen in, Mike. I sort of got in there at the manager's report and his long explanation about the lawsuit that was recently settled.
Yes. That was the first time I've heard. Of course, it had been revealed once the settlement was announced, revealed across the top of the page of Anchorage Daily News. The settlement had occurred, and yet, in this formal setting, the manager did go through all of the detail of the requirements and the settlement, and particularly the point that the city is not admitting blame in this settlement.
Right. And it was, I guess the part that caught my eye was there was a little quite a discussion, sort of intense, about the fact that the manager and the attorney had signed off on it without council approval.
That I think you've stated it correctly. It was intense. Watching the body language as well as listening to the emotion, I saw the intensity in the voices of both the mayor and other council members as they basically asked the question, why were we not in some way informed of this, because the council, I think the mayor as well, discovered that by reading the paper or hearing people talk about it without having any of the inside information or a call from the manager or saying to the mayor, it's done and we can expect that to be hitting the press and we'll be going through the whole thing when we have our next meeting, perhaps. But that apparently was not done.
So you've been on that city council, Mike, and I can't, although I don't have any knowledge of it, it seems pretty good bet that there has been other lawsuits with the city that have been cleared up or, they've been resolved. Is that, as someone who really kind of has watched this up from the peripheral, and, kind of knows a little bit about the way the legal system works, particularly an amount of the money that was in question and sounding like most of it, it was $50,000 and there was just $10,000 that the city actually were on the hook for on this one. Is it unusual for them to go through? I mean, usually when lawsuits are settled, there's some type of a time urgency where they, I couldn't decide whether they thought they should have had a special meeting to sign off on it or if the, is that normal for that to happen, for them to be involved at that level?
I can't speak to the long history of the variety of suits. I've been both on the school board and the city council when there have been settlements that were to be negotiated and the rest of it. But what I did do was have some conversations with people who've been there in the past. And I think there are two things to be said here. One, there is always a kind of communication that is personal and is sometimes difficult to describe in legislation to say, you will do this and so on. In other words, you have a manager and a mayor, particularly here in Palmer, that keep one another apprised of things. The mayor hears something that'll be shared with the manager and the manager with the mayor. And those conversations can be, they don't have to be formal. You don't have to send a letter and all the rest of it. But there is a formality about the process when you involve the council. I was a little surprised to hear that that the mayor and the council had not been informed of the settlement. My understanding, and here I could well be corrected, and please, if someone's listening and can correct me, that'd be cool, but my understanding was that basically there was an executive session where the go forth and settle this instruction was given. And it's extended a little bit in the sense that it's the insurance company that's involved in the negotiation. So you have, you have the manager and the attorney for the city, but you also have this the insurance company. And so you don't have the mayor or the council member sitting in on that negotiation, et cetera. But they've been, they go for and they settle it. So there's some suggestion that the insurance company is running the show with the guidance or intention stated from the council. And so once they've settled that, the requirement to come back and say, okay, council, will you approve this? That's I do not believe necessary, but what is useful, and here from a both an internal and external public relations standpoint, is the heads up that it has been settled.
Right.
Okay, and I think that's what I was seeing there, and I'm going to interpret in a little bit the response from basically the city manager and the attorney, that maybe in hindsight, or maybe the next time, this would be done differently. Now, keep in mind that the party that was being negotiated with on the other side involved the ACLU. And I would submit what I've heard basically is that you're dealing with an organization on the other side which is very adept at communicating results. In other words, it has a very good media sense.
Mm-hmm.
I would submit that even though when we look at some of the larger entities we have, the borough assembly, even the school board, they're larger and they have public relations people.
Mm.
And there's a reason for that, because there's a lot of information that needs to be gotten out, and it takes attention. If you were to ask the question, who is the PIO at the city, there isn't, to my knowledge, that position. And so what you have is a shared duty, if you will, I think, between the manager and the mayor. But it's, I would say at this point, the other side in this legal suit had the better sense and immediately got stuff out. And as a result, basically what I saw was that the council and the mayor felt a little bit blindsided, because when you do that and you don't have any information, and the citizenry comes and says, well, what happened here? And you're left saying, I'm going to find out because I don't know. That's an awkward.
Well, I think it was really mostly the mayor and Councilman Best that were the most.
Right. Until the end,
yeah.
when there were,
yeah.
were some comments made in support of that, you know, need to know that. But I would agree.
Right.
But I
think also, I mean, I just think of there's been numerous lawsuits that the assembly that has settled. I'm thinking insurance claim with the ferry maybe being one or whatever. And I don't normally see the assembly taking that motion to approve on it.
I think it's
a business decision, and
right.
and the mayor, I think we, you know, kind of need to be reminded that managers work for the council, but they have certain direction to, you know, work on behalf of the council. So we'll see. Hopefully the city will not be faced with any type of other suit. But I was a little surprised at the discussion, so I just wanted to bring that up. The other thing, Mike, I guess I would bring up is the clerk did put out some information about the election being next Tuesday.
That's correct.
And that, you know, early voting has already started Monday through Friday, 9 to 7, and Saturday from 10 to 3, and then October 1st from 9 to 5. And these aren't at the city. They're at the state elections office, or the borough, I guess.
Right, definitely the borough building, too. Yes.
Yeah, the borough building. So, and the last day to get an absentee ballot has already passed, because that was September 25th. So the election will, the canvas board will count what is the election that will happen on next Tuesday. And again, there's three people vying for two seats for the council. Those three people, two are sitting council members, Mr. Best, Mr. LaFrance, and a new face, Julie Berberick, has thrown her name in. And the top two vote getters in that will be sworn in on October 8th, along with Linda Combs, who surely will be sworn back in because she doesn't have an opponent.
Right, and for her two-year seat, right, exactly.
Her two-year seat, right, she'll have a two-year seat. And then also there are lots of four boards, I think, that are looking to fill positions with
wonderful opportunity for anybody who wants to get involved, right?
Yeah, Parks and Recreation, the Economic Board, I think the Planning and Zoning Commission,
and the
Airport
Advisory Board, right?
So it's on the and that's a good way if people are wanting to get involved, but they're a little don't like the whole idea of running for office and maybe need a little more experience or need some background in what goes on at the city. I really encourage people to sit on those boards. You learn how, if you don't know how rules, Robert's Rules of Order work and how information is disseminated from the cities, and it's a really good opportunity to do it. And some of them require you be in the city of, live in the city of Palmer, and some of them don't. So the borough or the city website has that information. It's going to be in the Frontiersman. On Facebook, and there's a bulletin if you want to see it the old-fashioned way down at City Hall, talking about those. And the applications online, you can get one from the clerk. But the important thing is they're closing the door on those applications kind of quickly.
On Friday.
At 4:30, yeah, on Friday. So that's kind of wanted to Good. Make sure we get that pitch in.
Yeah, thank
and
you.
And then the majority of the rest of the time they took talking about, which didn't surprise me much at all, and that was a deep conversation about changing the bed and breakfast tax. You want to speak to that? Or bed and breakfast is period in Palmer, I guess.
Well,
do you want to speak to that, Mike?
I could say a few things. I could say a lot of things because it was a long effort. The change was to eliminate the B&B reference, really, and make a broader definition of short-term rentals, and then look at the different zoning areas of residential through commercial and apply different requirements to all of them. And I've listened to a number of people who looked at it and said, this pretty much cover the zone and everything, and the manager did point out that there were a number of amendments that clarified, and those were seemingly good improvements. I think the bottom line was the question to say, okay, having done this, can you answer the simple question is if I want to have a short-term rental. And I happen to be in a residential area, or, can I do, what do I have to do actually to do that if I wanted to rent a room in the form of a B&B type of thing or a short term, 30 days or less, or if I'm in a light commercial area, there's some different approaches to this. How do I go about it? And what was suggested, stated, that there would be a worksheet, brochure, guideline, so that soon, not today, but soon, there would be an ability for someone to walk in to a city office and say, okay, I want to do this. What are the steps I have to go through? Business license? Can I do it? I live here. Can I do this in a part of my house? But what if I have a separate, maybe I have a separate building here that I'm going to use as a short-term rental? And maybe it's a garage that I've converted. But the real discussion that went on, and I think that took some time, was the realization, and I think Council Member Pete LaFrance pointed to this using the term disruptive, that this is a disruptive thing that is happening with short-term rentals, and akin to somewhat the Uber and Lyft in the short-term use of vehicles for transportation. This is something that is changing the landscape of how we do things, and I think what came across was that the city was making a good faith effort to accommodate for this, knowing that, many people have experienced the use of short-term rentals when traveling all over the country. And Palmer has been a little bit slow in defining this And of course, what came up toward the end was a companion piece of accessory dwelling units. So if you have a short-term rental, what about a longer-term rental that's going to be short of the whole house or a duplex or something of this sort? And that's going to be coming up next. But it's all designed to look and say, does the city want to encourage individuals who have properties to be able to either on a short-term or long-term basis provide rental different than the classic that we've understood to have happened? And mm-hmm. I think if you listened, and people can listen to the recording that we've put up, you can see how council members, I would say, struggled by asking a whole series of questions to really understand what appeared to be on the first glance a straightforward writing of the ordinance.
Right, and we two things to probably head at the beginning of that conversation is this went completely through the Planning and Zoning Commission too, and they actually made the suggestions, or at least some of them, to change it from, you know, get rid of the bed and breakfast name into short-term rentals, and the amendments that were made. So it did go through a vetting process.
Absolutely. Yes, good point.
You know, they, of course, members of the public sometimes don't take advantage of going to those meetings, but they do are open to the public, and there's pretty robust discussion on that. Sometimes they go through it even better than what the Assembly does, because it's the only piece in front of them as opposed to just a piece on the Assembly or on the agenda. There also was some discussion at the very beginning that I don't want to skip over, that Councilwoman Combs made the point that she wanted to offer to recuse herself because she does own a sort of an Airbnb. She's actually a neighbor of mine, and I have not seen anything but nothing different than ever anything has ever been there before. It's just a quiet neighborhood that has somebody taking advantage of a different way to stay in Palmer. And there was a little bit of a discussion on that back and forth. And at the end of the day, Mr. Best wanted her to recuse herself, as did, I think, the mayor. But the vote came down to have Ms. Combs stay. And I think it was a good idea to have her stay because she has first-time hand experience and what that is an impact to her property and her neighborhood. And, you know, she didn't have a lot of discussion about it, but that was the first little discussion that they had. And then it went on. I think there was some angst on the part of some assembly or some council members about having these in Zone 1 or residential areas 1, or which is primarily just housing. Most of it revolves around parking, Mike, which kind of makes me throw my hands up in the air because parking is so often used for a reason to not do something, that we don't have enough parking. And, you know, I go back to what I always say, and that is, who are we building our communities for, people or cars? We have a lot of off-street parking here. What we suffer from is lack of sidewalks sometimes. And you know, so it makes it sort of an undefined area where people are supposed to park their car because we don't have sidewalks to have the curb effect. But that came up again. It's kind of the thing that's thrown out there as a roadblock a lot. And at some point, they probably will need to take that up as a whole, just to sort of look at what is available really for off-street parking and lot parking. And we actually have quite a bit of parking in Palmer. And also, you know, I guess I will throw my pitch in here too, and there's data to support it. You know, people actually spend money when they're biking and walking and have alternative methods of getting around. And I know that can be problematic in the wintertime, but if we keep our sidewalks clear and we think about providing enough, as much space for walkers as we do for people in cars, you know, they will get around, and we want to encourage healthy, livable communities, and that's one way to do it. So I think, if I'm not wrong, Mike, they did pass it at the end of the day with no real amendments they kind of accepted with the zoning planning and zoning commission?
Yeah,
did I miss something?
Well, pretty much. It I would say it's safe to say that it was approved. There was some reluctance initially, but eventually it was approved pretty much as it had been amended, essentially by the manager. Yes.
Okay.
I believe.
Because I know Mr. Buss was not very much in support through the whole thing, but I didn't.
Yeah, I think they finally did that. And we could be fact-checked on that, but
sure,
I believe it
sure.
was unanimous as
sure.
so on. So,
sure.
yeah.
Well, these are really big issues in communities. You know, the other thing they didn't talk very much about, and I would hope the manager will be tracking it, is people get licensing for these facilities, and they also start some enforcement of them. Interesting to see how that changes the income to the city of Palmer, because that's one specific thing that people try to have good code in here,
sure.
because
and
that is a way to collect revenue.
That was interesting, because I did not hear the projections, mm-hmm. which I would like to, of what happens if you have 200 of these operating. What does that do in terms of income and so on? But we're coming close to the end of
yep.
this edition of the Citizen Lobbyist. Any last comments before we finish up
nope.
there?
Nope. Just to remind people that our local elections are very, very important. And not only will the cities all have their election next Tuesday, but there also is a borough election with some candidates for school board and with mayor and assembly members. I think you've done some radio recordings
yep.
of those.
Yep,
mics.
We have
people
nine of them, and they're up
that.
On our website, right?
Yep, yep. And there's some really important ballot measures, too, that people should chime in. And there's information on the news section, the front page. If you scroll down on the borough website, Patty Sullivan put together one-pager sort of on what the three ballot measures are. There's a lot of talk on those. And I also think in the city of Wasilla today, there's a Get Out and Meet the Candidate sort of event going on over there at the Extreme Fund Center, I think is where it is, that city of Wasilla is going to be hosting, or the chamber is. So people, do your homework and get out and let's see our attendance at local elections be just a little bit better this year.
Okay. Thank you, Citizen Lobbyist. Have a good day.
All right. You too.
You've been listening to The Citizen Lobbyist, broadcast on Thursdays at 8 a.m. and repeated at 5 p.m. on Big Cabbage Radio in Palmer, Alaska. You can find the podcast at radiofreepalmer.org. The views and opinions of moderators and guests do not necessarily represent those of Radio Free Palmer, this station, or its underwriters. If you have any comments or questions, please email manager@radiofreepalmer.org.